Ви з SBS українською. Знайдіть більше чудових історій на sbs.com.au/ukrainian.
Today we are talking about a new book written by Professor Marko Pavlishin, Ukrainian Literature, a Wartime Guide for Anglophone Readers. Introduction has been written and presented by Dr. Irina Skubi, Mykola Zerov Fellow in Ukrainian Studies, School of Historical and Philosophical Studies.
Dear guests, welcome to the book launch. Today we celebrate the publication of Marko Pavlishin's new book, Ukrainian Literature, A Wartime Guide for Anglophone Readers, which has recently been published by Cambridge University Press in its series Elements in Soviet and Post-Soviet History. The event is hosted by the Ukrainian Studies Association of Australia and New Zealand. And before I introduce, in just a few minutes, our distinguished author, Emeritus Professor Marko Pavlishin, and the editor of this series, Professor Mark Idele, I would like to say a few words about this remarkable book and why it's so important and special today. Ukrainian Literature, A Wartime Guide for Anglophone Readers, is a powerful and timely introduction to Ukrainian literature in English translation. While many Ukrainian authors have already been translated into English, there has been long a perception that Ukrainian literature remains largely inaccessible to readers abroad. And with this book, Professor Pavlishin in fact proves the opposite. What this book is also show us is that the decolonization of Ukrainian studies and literature began well before the past few years, though has remained largely unnoticed by international audiences. And as historian, I also find it's very surprising and refreshing that Marko begins his book not with the distant past, but with the present, with the responses of Ukrainian poets and prose writers to Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, as well as the preceding 8 years of war. This decision not only speaks to the urgency of the current moment, but also powerfully anchors Ukrainian literature in the lived experiences of today. The book then takes the readers on a compelling journey back to Ukraine's medieval past, ending with Prince Igor Svetoslavich's campaign on the eastern and southern frontiers of Kievan Rus against nomads, a history that may echo today in unexpected ways. And another important feature of this book is its concise format. Only a writer as skillful as Professor Pavlishin could condense the entire Ukrainian literary history into just 10 concise chapters. From my experience teaching the entirety of Ukrainian history in just 10 lectures, I can say that it's an immensely challenging task. And I imagine that with a project as ambitious as this book, some topics have been included, others combined or excluded, and it would be great to hear later from the author about his decisions during the writing process. At its core, the book explores the long and complicated history between Ukraine and Russia. For many Anglophone and non-Ukrainian readers, it may come as a revelation that war has deep historical roots, shaped by centuries of Russia's imperial colonization, political subjugation, and repression. And I believe that this book illustrates for us how literatures in Ukraine could tell us the story of their beginnings on Ukrainian land, building the nation, its entanglement and fight against empire and totalitarianism, national revolution and independence. Although the book focuses primarily on texts written in Ukrainian, it's also about the richness of Ukraine's multilingual literary history. Here we can find about Polish, Russian, Jewish, Crimean Tatar writers that have shaped Ukraine's literary landscape. And before we begin our conversation, let me introduce our author and editor. Marko Pavlishin is an emeritus professor of Ukrainian studies at Monash University, where he taught Ukrainian language and literature and was director of the Mykola Zerov Center of Ukrainian Studies. His scholarly specialization is modern and contemporary Ukrainian literature, and he is the author of many books and publications on literature, culture, national identity of Ukraine, and post-colonial approaches to literatures. And our second speaker today, Mark Idele, is the inaugural Hansen Professor in History at the University of Melbourne. He's a historian of the Soviet Union and its successor states. A former Australian Research Council Future Fellow, he has served as a Deputy Dean of Melbourne University's Faculty of Arts. His publications include many books in Soviet history, Stalinism, and Second World War, and the most recent one titled Russia's War Against Ukraine, The Whole Story. Thank you.
Interesting book, interesting time. Ukrainian literature during the wartime for people who just speak English and other languages. Professor Marko Pavlishin, please tell us, why did you decide to write this book during this time?
The war is a special challenge to anyone who is close to Ukraine and is in solidarity with Ukraine. And as a scholar, one asks oneself, what can I do that will, on the one hand, correspond to my expertise and, on the other hand, perhaps be helpful in telling the Ukrainian story to a broader audience? And so the idea of a book talking about the current war and then working backwards, going through the various phases of Ukrainian history from the present to medieval times, and in each instance reflecting on how the nature of the conflict, the opposition between a renewed imperial aggressive power and a country and a nation that has recovered its independence 30 years ago and is determined to retain it and retain its identity, how that conflict appears in writing today, or how predecessors of it appeared in past times. So we begin with a consideration of wartime poetry as translated into English. And we begin with a reflection on how it is that English-speaking readers are able to apprehend how Ukrainian poets replicate their experiences, replicate their thoughts and feelings in verse. And so that was the inspiration for the book, and the structure of it reflects that objective.
Professor Mark Edel.
I was struck when rereading the book before the launch about the important role of poetry in Ukrainian literature, not just now, but also historically. And I wonder if you have some thoughts on this central role of poetry over other literary forms.
Yes, you're quite right, Mark. Poetry throughout Ukrainian literary history has been the dominant, the preeminent genre. And there are reasons for this. In the period of the modern formation of the Ukrainian nation, Ukraine was subsumed as a colony within an imperial state. And so Ukraine was always struggling to create a literature which would be the foundation of a nation, rather than using the existence of a society, a nation, in which language and literary culture were established. So Ukraine didn't have the opportunity to have novelists writing major novels and offering them to a large public able to read them and, more importantly, buy them. It wasn't possible to be a professional novelist for a person wishing to dedicate themselves to Ukrainian literature. What was available was the form of poetry, which is, in general, a genre of shorter forms, a genre that enables the direct expression of thought and feeling, and that is not dependent on a large market and doesn't require the investment of an infinite amount of time and the full investment of one's energies. As, you know, the production of the 19th century long realistic novel does, for example. In one way, the fact that Ukrainian literature historically focused more on poetry is a product of, you know, the colonial circumstances in which Ukrainian literature developed. Today, in the present, the reason for the predominance of poetry is different. It is a time when many people who have not thought of themselves as poets in the past are so moved by the experience and the suffering occasioned by the war that they turn to poetry as a means to express their feelings, to express their emotions, sometimes their outrage, often their reflections. And they can do this in short forms much more easily than in long forms. You can write a poem in the gap between one shelling and the next shelling. You can write a poem as you're sitting in the compartment of a train, departing from your home city. You can write a poem later tonight as you're trying to de-stress and just tapping away at your computer and allowing the words to shape themselves. It's something that is spontaneous and therefore appropriate to the terrible character of the times in which Ukrainians live today. Later on, no doubt, there will be the long prose works that reflect on the war experience, as was, after all, the case in other European literatures. The big works about war always came retrospectively.
Professor Mark Edel.
Yeah, and of course the other aspect of that is that poetry as a short form is also particularly well suited to social media and that entire social media landscape we operate in, right?
Exactly. There is no need for that protracted filtration process where, you know, the poet creates a collection, submits the collection for publication, either to a journal or to a publishing house. Every person can be his or her own publisher today, and people take that opportunity and use it to wonderful effect.
Now, this is an existential war, right, for Ukraine and for Ukrainians. And cynics might say writing poetry or writing about poetry might be a waste of energy, which is better spent fighting. And we together organize an entire online seminar series called Ukraine Writes Back, right? So we must be thinking that there is something useful to that process of writing back. So I would like you to invite you to reflect a little bit about the role of literature in wartime and then also the role of a book like yours, a guide to the Ukrainian literature at war for readers outside of Ukraine who read in English.
Mark, as journalists repeatedly have emphasized, the war has been a hybrid war since 2014. And after the full-scale invasion of 2022, it remains a hybrid war fought on many fronts. The military, of course, but also the economic, the diplomatic, and naturally the cultural front as well. The war needs to be reflected in the thoughts and in the creative outputs of the people who experience it. People need to reflect their experience in every way that seems appropriate to them. And so, you know, this fact that many people, unprompted, have begun to work creatively writing poetry is simply a fact. That is one of the aspects, one of the phenomena, one of the manifestations of this war. Of course, it's unsurprising that people who are professional poets have also had to reflect on the meaning of this war for themselves and for their readers and for their aesthetics, for how they see the world and how they reflect that vision in poetic form. And that being the case, it's up to those of us whose business it is to read and understand and systematize cultural phenomena to pay our due respect to what is happening on the literary landscape in Ukraine and to show others who may not have direct access to Ukrainian poetry, Ukrainian literature more broadly in the original, the opportunity to learn about this war in their own language, in English translations of what it is that Ukrainian poets are writing now. And people need to be guided to the places where they can find publications of Ukrainian poetry. And that's the practical objective of this book, to help readers who want to understand Ukraine through its literature to find those places where that literature is reproduced, or one never reproduces in translation, but where that literature is interpreted through translation into English.
I would like to ask you, Marco, a somewhat self-serving question. So your book was published in a series which I edit together with Rebecca Friedman as part of the Cambridge University Press Elements series, and the series is called Elements in Soviet and Post-Soviet History. And I was wondering why you chose to send your manuscript to us, or to, in the first instance, to approach me with the idea of writing this book for this series of very short...
Mark, what impressed me about the series was its self-description as a conscious endeavor to present sides of scholarship concerning the Soviet and post-Soviet spaces in a new way, in a decolonial way, as we're accustomed now to saying in scholarly circles, but actually in a way that tries to restore some justice to the scholarly environment, which hitherto has privileged the Kremlin, Moscow, Russia as the core part of that entire Soviet and post-Soviet space. And it has done so at the expense of proper attention being paid to places like Ukraine, all of the other Union republics of the Soviet Union, the various indigenous peoples who inhabit those parts of the world. So, your series, as I read its manifesto, deliberately set itself the task of doing something that I have been trying to do in my own writing from the 1990s onward, to turn attention toward Ukrainian issues. And your series was simply the best venue for doing that.
Thank you. I mean, one of the things the series also does is give a kind of a space for somewhat experimental history writing. It's quite self-consciously a presentist history, a history of the present, which some historians find a corruption of their business, while it strikes me that it is, history is always in some way present-centric, because it's written by people who are located in a space and a time, which will focus their attention to certain things and not to others. And we're trying to do that quite self-consciously in that series. But one of the really interesting experimental parts of your, or experimental aspects of your history of Ukrainian literature, is that it is in reverse chronological order. So it doesn't begin somewhere and then go straight to the present, but it begins in the present and then goes backwards. And I'm wondering if you want to reflect on why you have chosen this kind of order rather than the more conventional way to tell a history, which is begin at some point and end at another one chronologically later.
Mark, the book is directed in the first instance to those readers who know little about Ukraine but would like to learn through Ukraine's literature what Ukraine is all about and what Ukrainians want and who they are. And my assumption has been that they're inspired to want this by present-day circumstances, by the war which they see unfolding, on their computer screens and their television screens. So it seemed natural to address this desire of the imagined reader first, to talk about the present, to sketch what is happening now, to give guidance as to where one can find the publications that are important in Ukraine and have been translated into English. And then it's more natural, I suppose, having talked about the present, to look at causes, to look at preludes, anticipations, And so the chapters of the book, the 10 chapters, go back. They start with the date of 2023, that being, you know, the date when Victoria Amelina, the poet and novelist and civil activist, died as a result of wounds she received during the shelling of Kramatorsk. And then, you know, the next date is 1992, the date of the publication of a revolutionary book immediately after the commencement of Ukrainian independence. Then 1965, the period of the resistance to Soviet authoritarianism in the work of the so-called people of the 1960s, the poets, the critics, the artists. The key text there being Internationalism or Russification by Ivan Zhuba. And so on, all the way back to the Middle Ages. And that also gave me an opportunity to place the Middle Ages last, not only because the texts there might seem more remote than those from more recent periods, but also because that is the period which figures so vividly in the fantasies of Vladimir Putin as he tries to justify his outrageous invasion of Ukraine and his denial of Ukraine's identity and its right to exist as a sovereign and an independent state. I wanted that part of the narrative to come last so that the connection between Kyiv and contemporary Ukraine would flow from everything that had already been said. Those were kind of the two conceptual reasons for going backwards, if you like. It also enabled me to pick key narratives for each of the chapters. If each chapter has a date, then there is always an event which can be narrated in an interesting way. So, for example, 1847, the date when the Brotherhood of St. Cyril and Methodius is arrested and its members, including Taras Shevchenko, are taken to St. Petersburg for interrogation. That narrative begins with a story of how the marriage plans, the wedding plans of the historian Mykola Kostomarov are interrupted by his arrest. And there are anecdotes like that which introduce each of the chapters, which I hope make the book even more readable than otherwise it would be.
And in the process also, you of course also provide a very short history of Ukraine as well. So the book can sort of serve as an introduction to the history of Ukraine as well, which is very useful.
Thank you very much. Now I have a question also. I would like to ask author why book refers to other literature cultures like Polish, Russian, Jewish, and Crimea Tatar.
That is an important principled decision that I made, that even this very, very short book, which had to fit within very strict guidelines of length, had to contain, in addition, of course, to its main narrative, which is the story of Ukrainian literature, at least some indications of the wealth of other cultures that developed in part or wholly on the territory of contemporary Ukraine. And the reason for that is that the book strives to be an argument that says that Ukraine is the territory which is encompassed by the internationally recognized borders of Ukraine as they are today. And today, and in all periods of Ukraine's history, those territories were inhabited not only by Ukrainians, but by people of different ethnicities, different cultures, different languages. And they, just as much as Ukrainians and the culture of Ukrainians, belong to the history and identity of Ukraine. And it seemed to me that at least pointing in the direction of the evolution of important other literatures like Polish, the Crimean Tatar, the German in Ukraine would serve that purpose.
I would like to thank everybody for interesting conversation, discussion, and description. Thank you, Professor Mark Edel, for your interesting questions. Thank you also, Professor Marco Pavlishin, author of the book, for your answers. And we hope to see more books. Thank you for sharing this information with our audiences. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, Oksana.
Oksana Мазур for SBS Ukrainian.
Хочете почути більше подібних історій? Слухайте в Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify або будь-якому іншому місці.